This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Are you curious? Are you wondering what's going on with Brian Koberger behind bars?
I am. Always interesting to get an update and see how the world behind bars is treating him after admitting to the horrific crimes that he committed and his lives destroyed and taken. So I'm sorry if he's kind of become that animal in a cage we like poking. Kind of has in some ways, but it's kind of like, well, you signed up for it, didn't you? When you did that, I think you signed up to be the animal that gets poked in the cage by hot coals. And we all watch and go, a little harder. Can you make that one sharper? Figuratively speaking, of course. There's no stage left for Brian Koberger. There's no audience, no tension between prosecution and defense. There's no headlines dissecting the shape of his jawline or the color of his suit. Well, that's gone. What's left is a man stripped down to his inmate number and a cell. His world is a concrete rectangle at the Idaho Maximum Security Institution outside Boise, a facility built for one purpose, containing the most dangerous, high-profile, and unimaginable prisoners the state can hold. When Koberger stood before the judge in July of 2025 and admitted guilt to the murders of four University of Idaho students, Ethan Chapin, Kaylee Gonzalez, Zanner Kernodle, and Madison Mogan, the courtroom went silent. It was a plea deal that spared the death penalty, but guaranteed four consecutive life sentences with no possibility of parole plus 10 years for burglary. Wasn't a partial victory. It was a permanent exile. The system closed around him, and within days, he was transferred out of the county custody and into IMSI. And as you've been following along with us, he's not having a great time. For Idaho, IMSI is the end of the line. This is the same prison that houses death row, administrative segregation, and the state's long-term restrictive housing units. Koberger isn't walking a general population yard or sharing a cell with another inmate. He's in J Block, a tiered unit used for inmates classified as too high profile or high risk for standard housing. That classification means nothing specific, long-term restrictive housing. Long-term restrictive housing, or LTRH, is one of the most isolating forms of imprisonment in the U.S. It's not a punishment for breaking rules in prison, though it can be used that way. It is a classification for inmates whose profile, crime, or risk factors require extreme control. Koberger qualifies on every count. High-profile case, quadruple homicide, national attention, the kind of inmate other prisoners either want to attack or exploit. So he lives alone. His cell is roughly 8 by 10 feet, a combination stainless steel toilet and sink. You may have seen pictures. A narrow bed bolted to a wall and enough floor space to pace a few steps back and forth. There's no TV bolted to the wall. No open cell block with communal tables, just a slot in the door for food trays and a tiny window to the outside world. Every time he leaves that cell, whether to shower, see a nurse, or step into the yard, he's restrained. Waist chain, handcuffs, ankle shackles, and an escort. Every single time. That's standard in LTRH. The rules don't bend because of who he is. They are in place precisely because of who he is. Showers happen on a schedule every other day, not whenever he feels like it, as we had heard stories in the jail where he would just take them endlessly. If he misses it, he waits. Outdoor recreation is allowed for 1 hour per day, but outdoor doesn't mean what people think it means. It's not a free yard with a basketball court and weights. It's restrictive housing. Outdoor rec usually means a single fenced enclosure. Some facilities call them dog runs, where an inmate can pace, stretch, or do push-ups under the sky. No more stargazing. No other inmates. No group activity. Just the sound of chain link and birds. The rest of his day, 23 of the 24 hours, is spent in the cell. Meals arrive through a slot. Officers pass by on rounds. If he has a medical or mental health appointment, it's scheduled and supervised. Even his legal calls are handled under strict protocols. Phones and electronic messages are privileges, not rights. Inmates in LTRH get access to monitor calls and electronic communication through vendors like JPay or, in Idaho's case now, ICS Solutions, bridge tablets. But the rollout of that system is uneven, and Koberger's own paperwork shows how much of his life revolves around something as mundane as accessing a digital kiosk. The resident concern forums, official IDOC documents obtained by TMZ, tell the story better than any outsider could. These are some new documents that were just obtained, and now we've had a chance to see. Want to hear about them? On July 27th, 2025, just 2 days after arriving at IMSI, Koberger wrote to staff complaining that he couldn't access JPay to place a full commissary order. Commissary is one of the only outlets inmates have for small comforts, instant coffee, chips, shampoo, writing supplies. In restrictive housing, it becomes even more important because there's nothing else to break up the monotony. A staff member responded that it takes time to get set up for a transfer, and he would just have to wait his turn. On August 13th, Koberger filed another form. This time it was a missing supply bag, a small bundle of items he'd requested but never received. Oh. Again, the response was matter of fact. Supply requests are fulfilled on Sundays. 5 days later, on August 18th, he wrote a thank you note to a sergeant for printouts and bubble sheets for commissary, letting staff know his JPay headaches were finally over. Those three forms, complaint, complaint, thank you, are more revealing than any headline. The rhythm of life in long-term restrictive housing. Time collapses. Bureaucracy becomes the primary activity. Small inconveniences feel huge because there's nothing else happening. There are no classes, there are no jobs, no group programs. In general population, an inmate might work in the kitchen, attend the chapel, or take GED courses. In LTRH, the programming is minimal. Chaplains might make rounds. Mental health staff might check in. But the default is silence. Books and mail are strictly controlled. Under Idaho DIC policy, books must come directly from approved vendors or publishers. No used books from family members. Property limits cap what he can keep. Because Koberger is in LTRH, he's allowed more books than someone in short-term segregation, up to 20. But everything else is tightly rationed. Radios, photos, hygiene items, even paper and pens go through security protocols. His communications are monitored. All calls except legal calls are recorded. Electronic messages are scanned. Physical mail is opened and inspected. This isn't special treatment. It is standard. But it means there's no real privacy either. No unfiltered contact with the outside world. Any message he receives or sends is under institutional microscopes. Even his recreation and commissary orders are designed to be isolating. Weekly commissary is handled by Keefe Commissary Network. Family members can send access secure pack packages, but everything still has to clear security. For someone like Koberger, whose case generated national outrage, that means staff are doubtfully careful. Nothing that could be contraband, nothing that could be used to harm himself or others is getting through. And because he's in long-term restrictive housing, his visits are almost certainly non-contact. IMSI's visiting policy for J-Block sets out tiers. Tier 1 may allow contact visits under certain circumstances. Tiers 2 and 3 do not. Those visits are behind plexiglass with a phone handset, if he gets them. For an inmate already cut off from most social interaction, that's just another layer of glass between him and the world. If you zoom out Koberger's life now is a case study in what criminologists call administrative segregation. In the 1970s and 1980s, U.S. prisons began building supermax units for exactly this kind of custody. The idea was control. No group activity, no opportunities for violence, no chance for high-profile inmates to be harmed or to harm others. But decades of research have shown that long-term isolation can have profound psychological effects. Even inmates with no mental illness on entry develop anxiety, depression, and cognitive decline after months in segregation. Good. Memory falters, emotions flatten, sleep cycles break down, and time loses meaning. Just like their lives. For someone like Koberger, whose academic background included studying criminal behavior, the irony is heavy. The man who wanted to analyze criminal minds is now living inside one of the most studied correctional environments in the world. But unlike in a graduate seminar, there's no case study to write. There's no outlet for analysis. There's just a cell, a routine, and a dwindling sense of relevance. We don't have to speculate about his mental state. The records we do have, those forms, those rules, paint a picture of a man whose daily existence is dominated by small bureaucratic tasks. Accessing a digital account, requesting a supply bag, thanking a staff member for a printout. These aren't the acts of someone plotting their next move. They're the acts of someone trying to fill the void. And that's the point. Long-term restrictive housing isn't designed to rehabilitate. It's designed to neutralize. Because some you just can't rehabilitate. You have to dumb down until they die. To remove an inmate from the social and physical ecosystem of the prison so completely that they cannot cause problems, it's a warehouse for the unmanageable. There's a tendency when talking about notorious criminals to imagine they're living in some kind of twisted luxury or that the prison system is coddling them. The truth is, in Idaho, it's the opposite. Koberger's life is stripped of almost every autonomy. He can't decide when to shower, when to go outside, or even when to make a phone call without pre-approval. His only consistent power is filling out forms and waiting. For the families of the victims, this reality may or may not bring comfort. Some victims' relatives prefer the death penalty, a swifter form of closure. Others prefer life without parole, believing that decades of confinement in a harsh is a much harsher punishment. But there's no soundbite that captures what life without parole and restrictive housing really means. It's not a headline. It's not a meme. It's 23 hours a day alone in a concrete box for decades until age or illness ends it. There's also no notoriety in that. The media won't cover his commissary order 6 months from now. Neither will we. They won't run photos of his cell after the first year. Interest will fade. That's exactly how the system is built. High-profile inmates go in. The door shuts, and they disappear into a world of routines, forms, and silence. For Koberger, that disappearance is already underway. His case is no longer a trial. There are no appeals to argue. The courtroom theater is gone. He's become an inmate number in the J block. No more lectures, no more control, just a long countdown of days inside a place designed to make days indistinguishable from one another. Maybe that's the point. The state didn't create a dramatic spectacle to punish him. We created a system that removes the spectacle altogether. In a culture obsessed with notoriety, that's its own form of justice. Because Brian Koberger is not on a stage anymore. He's not in a classroom. He's not on the internet. He's in a box. And the only thing waiting for him outside that box is another box. A small fenced yard where he can pace under the Idaho sky for 1 hour a day alone before the door closes again. That's what life without parole really means. Not redemption, not rehabilitation, not revenge. Just the slow erosion of a life until it's unrecognizable, managed by forms, schedules, and restraints. And for a man whose choices inflicted unimaginable pain on four families and an entire community, maybe that's as close to as we get for justice. Not spectacle, not mercy, but silence. Give me your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening or watching so you don't miss any of our coverage on this and the many that we cover for you right here. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.